happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup, back from a couple of weeks off.
And from a very busy Pride Week. And we have Pride reports from around the country as Vice President Harris made a visit to the Stonewall.
Yeah, and she wasn't the only one. And Dr. Jill Biden was going around the country, too. Meanwhile, New York City and state officially make themselves safe havens for trans youth, families, and healthcare providers.
A Trump judge upheld a state ban on changing your sex designation on your birth certificate.
That's kind of mean-spirited during Pride Month. But a federal judge blocked Ron DeSantis's ban on drag shows.
The mass killer at Club Q in Colorado Springs last November got 2,200 years in prison, I think.
Considered a life sentence. A pro basketball coach has come out.
War rages in Ukraine, but they're having their first LGBTQ film festival.
I could make a few recommendations. 93 people were arrested at a defiant pride in Istanbul, where they've now banned pride for 9 years in a row.
Up to 113 since Anne last reported. An LGBTQ teen in Israel was slain in what is likely an honor killing by her family.
Ironically named. 3 years after his death, gay and AIDS activist Larry Kramer got a moving and star-studded memorial service this week.
I'm going to review comedian Alex Edelman in Broadway's Just For Us.
And our guest is pioneering lesbian activist Martha Shelley on her new memoir, We Set the Night on Fire, Igniting the Revolution. On her activism before, during, and after Stonewall.
And we welcome Martha, I hope. Yeah, hi, Martha, out there.
Hi, Martha.
You recount it all in your page-turner of a memoir, and I hope everyone will read your book. I found the story of your early years, a child of parents escaping anti-Semitism, very compelling. But let's get into your activism, not just as a lesbian, but anti-war activist and for economic justice. What drove you? What produced all that kind of activism in you back in the, you know, the 60s?
What drove me was actually that those origins of escaping anti-Semitism and hearing stories about the Holocaust. And I would always ask myself, what would I have done if I were in Germany, not Jewish, because I wouldn't have much choice about what to do. What if I'd been a German and opposed to Hitler? Would I have had the courage to stand up against Hitler, to shelter people, to do something to oppose the situation? And every time I've had to ask myself, what do I do next? That's what comes up for me.
Well, I think it's a very important question because it's a question that is occurring every day, certainly now, and has for decades, because we see people who know there are wrong things happening, and yet they're not speaking up, not doing things. How was it that you got propelled into action, and what do you think about the people who are not?
I think the truth is the majority of people everywhere just want to be left in peace. And it's only a small minority that are willing to take the chances. And that's okay. That's the nature of the human race. But what I would do is encourage anyone who has the ability, who has the courage to go ahead. What's happened for me really was sort of rebellions in school when I started asking questions. And then came the Vietnam War. And I met people who were protesting. I thought it was 1963. And I started going on anti-war marches. I think I was 19 at the time. We would take buses and go to Washington and protest. And of course, I had been inspired by the civil rights movement. My best friend in middle school was Black, and I was horrified by what was happening to Black people. I was in love with her. I didn't know it at the time. I was a kid. And then my best friend in high school for the first year was Japanese. And, you know, had to deal with the prejudice there. So all of those things inspired me. Then when I was, 23, I had already had a relationship with another woman, and I was looking to meet women. So I found the Daughters of Bilitis, and I went there, and the women who were running the place saw me. They heard me, you know, being an articulate college kid, and thought I would be useful. So they asked me to run for treasurer. Well, I didn't know anything about keeping books. I was a flop at treasurer. I didn't steal anything. They gave me credit for that. But the woman who, one of the women who ran the organization was a bookkeeper, and so she took that job back. Eventually, I found out that the best thing I could do was be the public speaker. And again, I was 23, young and dumb, and I wasn't thinking about a long-term career, that I could lose a job. And I thought, you know, clerical job here and there, I can always get another one. And so I became the public spokesperson for the New York chapter of Daughters of Bilitis. And I went to college campuses and spoke to abnormal psych classes, explaining why gay people were not abnormal, or why we were not sick. We were abnormal in the sense of the bell curve, where normal means the majority of people. And we just weren't in the majority. Then there was a radio show, and I had to go on that. And the next morning, I walked into the office, and my boss, who was this nice middle-aged, well, she was elderly, younger than I am now, she was 65. And she said she had heard that they were interviewing some of the students. I was working at Barnard College, and she had to stay up and listen to the show. And I thought, she's going to hear me. And I was scared. I thought, I actually liked the job. I thought, I'm going to lose this job. And I called the woman who was running Daughters of Bilitis and said, what am I going to do? She said, call the radio station. They'll take your segment off the air. Okay, here I am sitting in the office. There's a big poster that I had put up on the wall over my desk of Martin Luther King. I could not back down. At the end of the day, I went to see the boss and I said, Miss Palmer, I'm going to be on that radio show. And she said, what for? I says, I'm representing the Daughters of Bilitis. She said, what's that? And I said, a civil rights organization for lesbians. And she winked at me. She gave me a big wink and said, that's nice, dear. It's nice that you young people are fighting for all these causes. Now help me on with my coat or I'll be late to the opera.
That's a great story.
I knew about Miss Palmer.
And Martha, you paint a vivid picture of the kind of women who would be willing to get involved in the Daughters of Bilitis back then, because it took a lot of courage. You represented the Daughters of Bilitis at this action. We have a picture of it, and this is in Philadelphia. What? No, this year was what, like 1968, maybe?
1968.
This was called the annual remembrance, organized by Frank Kameny and Barbara Giddings, and you all had to dress up, the women in skirts, the men in jackets and ties, and it was a handful of people, but it had been going on for several years, and it was some of the first demonstrations ever.
Right, and I found it rather alienating. First of all, dressing up in a way that felt rather uncomfortable for me. I would do that for work, go to the job dressed like that. But after hours, when I was being me, I'd put on a pair of blue jeans and a shirt. also, it was sort of weird walking around in a circle there and all of these tourists, because this was at an Independence Hall in Philadelphia, looking at us, licking their ice cream cones, and like we were a freak show.
And I didn't like it
for that reason. It wasn't because I was scared or anything. But I will say that for the Daughters of Bilitis, there were only a handful of us who were out in public. Most of the women who came were looking for to meet other women, and were not out publicly. So it was, I was the public spokesperson in New York. Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon in San Francisco, and of course, Barbara Greer in, what was it, Kansas City, Missouri. And then there were Barbara Giddings and just a handful of people around the United States who were either courageous enough or crazy enough.
Well, give us a sense of how you all interacted at that time. And, you know, I look at my days with ACT UP and the friendships there and the way sometimes there were big fights and sometimes it was all love. And, you know, how did you all feel about each other? How well did you know each other? What was the gestalt of that?
I didn't get to know too many of the people there. I don't think people fought with each other, although I don't know that. I met this woman who became my lover there, and she was quite a bit older than me. She was about 40. I was, 23, 24 when we became lovers. And I met a few other people, but I think it was pretty friendly all in all. People came to meetings, they folded the newsletter and mailed it. They came to the dances. That's where I met her, one of the dances. And that was it.
And on the night of the Stonewall Rebellion, you are giving a tour to Daughters of Bilitis women from Boston, and you see it, and what do you say about it?
Well, okay, they were just wanting to start a chapter. So we see this bunch of kids throwing things at cops, and they were, you know, startled. And I thought it was an anti-war thing. I thought, oh, you know, it's just a riot. We have them all the time. I had been in anti-war demonstrations. I even had pictures of ones that I had gone to Berkeley and taken pictures of one where we were all running from the cops.
Like,
and
so
I went home and didn't think about it.
Well, yeah, and in 69, the anti-war movement was at its peak, and it would be natural to think that that's what was going on.
But you said in your book that you realized this was our moment, the Stonewall, and you organized the first LGBT gay demonstration a month after Stonewall, but you were one of the founders of the Gay Liberation Front that emerged from Stonewall, which really got the ball rolling in terms of organization. And how did you come to name it? Because you named it.
No. I was meeting with a bunch of people who were organizing that first protest march, which took place exactly 1 month after Stonewall. And the name came up. I don't know who said it, those words. And I started, and I grabbed it, and I said, that's it, we're the Gay Liberation Front. And that's what we became.
And what was its greatest accomplishment? Because it lasted 2 years. It burned brightly, but lasted about 2 years. What was its greatest accomplishment?
Reaching out to other groups. Well, there were two of these accomplishments. Reaching out to other groups of people like the Black Panthers, the Young Lords, which was a Puerto Rican liberation group, the women's movement, socialist groups, starting to get other groups that had avoided us, denigrated us, to understand that we were part of it too, that we too were revolutionaries as we styled ourselves in those days. And that started a whole social change. Because first it was the left, and then it spread to the more liberal groups of people that began to accept gay people as human beings.
And that was part of the Lavender Menace, so named by Betty Friedan, that got the women's movement to embrace lesbian rights. We have a picture of use. There you are, young Martha Shelley. What were you saying to them at this women's conference?
Well, first of all, I can't believe that's me. I was never that young.
You haven't changed a bit, Martha.
Okay, so what happened was we went in there. We had T-shirts stenciled with Lavender Menace underneath our other shirts. One of our gang turned off the lights, turned the whole auditorium black. And then we took off those shirts, and there we were standing there with Lavender Menace on our, stenciled on our shirts. And people had put up signs around the auditorium saying, "Lavender Jane loves you, take a lesbian to lunch," stuff like that. And my job was to jump up on the stage, grab the mic, and say why we were here briefly. And do you, because there was a program that they already had, and they had a group of women, one, a union woman, a black woman, and so on, representing different groups. And they were going to have a panel discussion. I said, "Do you want to go ahead with the panel, or do you want to hear from us?" And everybody in the auditorium said, "Yes, we want to hear from you guys." And that was it. We started, a bunch of us, others came up on the stage, and we talked about what we stood for, why we were there, why we wanted the women's movement, and specifically in this case, the National Organization for Women, to accept us and fight for us too, and fight with us.
Well, it's just an amazing triumph and something that those of us who weren't there look back on with just awe and delight. So thank you for that.
And your takeover of Weinstein Hall at NYU.
Okay, I confess, that's me selling our newspaper. I was one of the people who worked on the newspaper.
Come out.
Yes. Well, the Gay Liberation Front was not the kind of organization where you have, president, vice president, and so on. We were pretty anarchistic. If you wanted to do something, you joined together with other people and you worked on that project. Some people worked on putting together gay dances. Some people worked on what I worked on, which was the newspaper. And, oh, this is funny. I typeset the newspaper at night. I was working as a typesetter for a small firm it was a one-person business, but with a few of us employees in Greenwich Village. And the boss typeset stuff for the Black Panthers after hours. She was white. She was a radical. And I typeset the Gay Liberation Front newspaper and hawked it on the streets. So what happened with Weinstein Hall was that the Student Homophile League, or Student Homophile Organization, I'm not sure which it was, wanted to have a dance. And they negotiated and made a contract with the people who were running the dorm, the freshman dorm at NYU. When the administration heard about it, they had a fit. They called the Student Homophile League people and said, "What we will do is we will hire a psychiatrist and you will hire a psychiatrist and to decide whether or not you guys are nuts." And then after we listen to both psychiatrists, we'll decide whether you can have this dance. Well, this was, a joke. So Ellen Broidy, who was, I guess, the head of the Student Homophile Organization, came running to Gay Liberation Front for help one evening. And a bunch of us marched over to Weinstein Hall and talked to her. And then we had a meeting. And in the middle of that meeting, trying to talk about what to do, we decided we're going to have the dance anyway, regardless of what the administration wants. And then I raised my hand and said, "If we're going to do that, we can't just publicize it, because when we show up for the dance, they're going to have the cops, security guards, we will be standing out there, we'll never get inside. Why don't we just occupy the place and starting right now?" So a bunch of us went back to people who were meeting at Gay Liberation Front and said, "This is what we're doing." And people from Gay Liberation Front went marching down the street to NYU. And on the way back, were on the way there, rather, we picked up a whole bunch of street queens who were happy to find a place to spend the night where they didn't have to sell their ass or pay money, because they were, you know, young kids, broke, people who had been thrown out of their families, who were making their living by prostitution because they didn't have job skills. You know. And we occupied the place for the better part of a week. And then the university called the cops and arrested everybody, threw them out.
Well, the book is full of stories like this, both from your youth and right through to these kinds of things and beyond. I wish we had more time, but I urge everybody to read the book.
Can we take one more minute to get a little reflection from Martha on what's going on today?
Sure.
Well, okay. What we say at Passover, I'm Jewish, is in every generation, a new Pharaoh arises to oppress us. Well, guess what? Whatever we've won, there's a new Pharaoh and a whole cohort of them, including certain people on the Supreme Court, who are trying to take away everything that we want. And we're going to have to fight again and to keep what we've got and to move things farther along. So that's number one on my agenda. But even before that, and this is very important, we have to consider that the most important issue of our time, the two most important issues, climate change, because if we burn up, if this planet becomes uninhabitable, our rights ain't worth nothing because we'll be dead. Number two, economic inequality. If you have to work three jobs in order to pay the rent and you still don't have enough money for food, your rights ain't worth anything either. So those two are primary in my struggles for me. And then after that, gay rights, women's rights, the rights of people who are not white, all of those are the struggles.
All right, we've got the agenda. Thank you, Martha. It's you will have to come back early and often because we have a lot more to talk about.
I will be happy to do so.
Okay.
You just let me know when.
Take care.
And well. happy end of Pride Month. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Yes. Highly recommend the book. And great to be able to put everything that's going on today in a larger context, which we need to get ourselves motivated and moving.
All right. Let's go to our Pride coverage for this year. We've got, I think we're starting off with a picture of Jill Biden at Nashville Pride. She made the rounds, Dr. Jill Biden there.
And she's in the belly of the beast there in Tennessee.
Exactly. The hate state. And then she went to the Twin Cities Pride in Minnesota, and she said, Joe and I will stand with you always. We're here to say that you belong.
And looking mighty pretty, I might say.
And then, no less than the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris, I think it's the day after Stonewall, is there with Andy Cohen in the Stonewall Inn, the Stonewall Bar. And she said she's fighting with pride, but clear-eyed about this moment that we are in.
I want to know why it looks like no one's paying attention to her.
Well, someone who is paying attention to us was the head of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, Jamie Harrison. He went to the Stonewall, but he didn't just make a visit. He met with community leaders and, you know, the party's keeping the party on our side. You will not see this coming from the Republican National Committee anytime soon.
No, but the Democrats are so dependent more and more on our votes that I think we're going to see a lot of them.
And our votes and the votes of our allies.
Yes, certainly.
Okay. So then, Pride got underway in New York. You had Billy Porter, one of the New York City Pride's grand marshals, light up the Empire State Building for Pride. There he is.
He looks very cute in that outfit.
Atop the Empire State. That's the top there.
See, I'm only paying attention to how people look. I've really deteriorated.
Well, how does our friend Randy Wicker look? Randy is an activist who's 85 years old, older than Martha. He started his activism in 1958, and he was one of the grand marshals of the New York City Pride Parade.
Finally, you know, should have happened 20 years ago or 30 years ago. But congratulations, Randy. It's always great to see you being appreciated.
And then we had the Queer Liberation March, started in 2019 from Reclaim Pride, and it came off free of corporations and floats. There's Gays Against Guns marching, but it's a wonderful eclectic group. It's a nice, vigorous march. You know, it's not all this stop and go and wait for, you know, everything with the floats and the corporations and everything.
Because it's not regimented, because people just float around on the street and go anywhere they want, as should happen. It was a little smaller this year, just a little bit, because there were threats of thunderstorms all day and people, you know, didn't go running out into the street. But it was a big success and a happy time was had by all.
Yeah. And then we have some pictures of the drag march, which was on Friday in New York, taking on greater urgency with the backlash against drag. Among those in the march was our friend Rollerina, New York's fairy godmother, who looks like she's riding in some kind of conveyance there, but she's usually skating around. She's been cheering us up since the 1970s.
Yes. Now, there was a slight hiccup with the drag march. The right wing is exploiting it because, you know, these marches, they're fun. People make jokes. Gay people have a sense of humor and irony. So as we're under attack and are being called groomers every day and perverts and everywhere, someone in the drag march for about 4 seconds was chanting, "We're here, we're queer, we're coming for your children."
Well, I'd say we are coming for your children. We would like your children to be more tolerant. We would like them to be more accepting of themselves and others. That's the message that we're trying to send. I mean, you know, I remember the lesbian Avengers chanting 10% is not enough, recruit, recruit, recruit. Again, full of irony. Although we're doing better than 10% these days, it seems, certainly with young people, and it's got people freaked out.
And I remember when we were going to schools and doing education in the late 80s, early 90s, and people would say, you know, "You're trying to turn people gay," or whatever. And we'd say, "Yes, gay people. We're trying to turn gay people gay."
Exactly.
But anyway, the right wing has decided to exploit this, so they're going after us. But really,
come on. I came over to watch the Dyke March going down Fifth Avenue from Bryant Park to the Village. Another non-commercial march that takes place without permits or sponsors. The first Dyke March was in 1993, before our March on Washington in April. And that June, the first New York City Dyke March was held. San Francisco and Atlanta had them too. So 30 years of Dyke marches.
And always great freedom and great energy there. And a great tradition of not even thinking for a second of applying for permits, just exercising the right to freely assemble.
Right. And then let's go to Liberty Hill, Texas, where population 3,645, where Mayor Liz Branigan stood up to her city council and small-minded residents and declared LGBTQ Pride Month. The proclamation was sought by a woman named Amanda Crossland, whose son, JC, took his own life shortly after coming out. And I promised after he died I would do everything possible to make sure it doesn't happen to anyone else. So Branigan declared Liberty Hill an inclusive and supportive community where we oppose hate, abuse, discrimination, and bullying of any person. And she got a smattering of, "Lord have mercies, for shame."
But she also got some applause from assembled townsfolk. So
that's what the majority did.
Yeah. And back to New York, a couple of official proclamations by officials here. The governor, Governor Hochul, designated this, that's her in the middle in the orange blazer behind the podium, She designated New York State a safe haven for trans youth, health providers for them, their families, and for reproductive rights for those wanting abortion services. Anyone coming from out of state, doctors wanting to prescribe here in New York, everybody's safe from prosecution. And then Mayor Adams, you want to talk about what
he also signed an executive order protecting healthcare access to gender-affirming care in the city. It prohibits city resources from being used to persecute those who seek it, especially those from out of state. This was at his, he did this at his gay LGBTQ pride reception at Gracie Mansion, which I covered. You know, he actually gave a very powerful speech. We know his, about his mixed record, but he did do this.
Okay. Not so good news from Georgia, where a teacher there in Cobb County, and I think we remember from years ago, Cobb County is a very conservative place. She is an elementary school teacher, Katie Rinderly, and she has been fired from her position because she read a book to her class of gifted fifth graders. The book is called My Shadow is Purple, and it's about people examining their self-definition and getting along with people who are different. And the leaders of the school describe this as divisive.
Yeah.
Divisive. And she has been fired from her job for reading this book to her fifth graders. One of her students was so upset she had to go to counseling because she has lost her favorite teacher. Well, that divisive.
I mean, you know, some of the kids said, look, we have all kinds of shadows. They're yellow, brown, red, and green. But that's what was called divisive. She's fighting her dismissal, by the way.
Good. We told you last week about a TV station in Grand Rapids, Michigan, also a fairly conservative area, where the general manager or the news director, I think, had ordered the staff to cut back on its pride coverage because it was just too much in the land of Betsy DeVos. And the general manager has now apologized for that order. And
has he stopped listening to Newsmax for the source of his stories to give to his reporters?
Well, I think it was the news director who was doing that, and this is the general manager, but I don't know that for sure. I just know that this is Amway country. I've been to Grand Rapids, and it was some years ago, but you get off the plane, and there's a huge billboard about Amway and the DeVos family. And in Starbucks, also in Pride Week, their employees were, sorry, that's mine. Let me hang up on whoever that is. Starbucks employees were demonstrating, and the union employees, because their management did not want to allow Pride decorations in their stores. And so that fight is continuing. Some of the stores are still on strike with their employees. And that was a mess. And the management is saying, oh, no, no, we're very friendly to gay people. Leave us alone. But it's an ongoing fight. So what happens when employees unionize? They get more power.
Yeah. In terms of federal judges, you want the good news or the bad news?
Both.
All right. So in Florida, the good news, a federal judge blocked Ron DeSantis's ban on drag shows just days after another judge struck down his ban on Medicaid coverage of gender-affirming care. In the drag case, Hamburger Mary's Restaurant sued to continue its weekly event featuring drag queens. And U.S. District Judge Gregory Presnell, a senior judge appointed by Bill Clinton, issued a preliminary injunction saying Florida already has laws to protect children from obscene live performances, but this statute is specifically designed to suppress the speech of drag performers.
And therefore is unconstitutional. And then should we go to the bad judge in Tennessee?
Yes. It's a federal judge who dismissed a lawsuit by trans plaintiffs seeking to compel the state to let them change their sex designations on their birth certificates. A 1977 law forbids such changes. So this is Judge Eli Richardson, a Trump appointee. He said that for the purposes of a birth certificate, sex means external genitalia at the time of birth. And that doesn't change when a trans person adopts a new gender identity. So it's a Lambda case. The plaintiffs argued sex should be defined by gender identity. Tennessee is one of three states that don't let trans people change their sex designation on their birth certificates. But the others now are Kansas and Ohio. But they were found unconstitutional. But in the interim, three more have adopted bans on changes: Montana, North Dakota, and Oklahoma.
I feel like we need to have one big national conversation where everybody can go over these issues and understand them better. Because at the moment, we're sort of ping-ponging off the walls.
All they have to do is tune into Gay USA.
I'm not sure we're answering all the questions. The National Hockey League is having a debate. They have been very good about having pride nights over the last few years. But what happened in the last year or so is they have a lot of Russian players on the teams in the NHL, and they are claiming that the Don't Say Gay law in Russia endangers them and their families if they show any kind of, loyalty to the LGBT community. So they've been refusing to wear pride themed jerseys at the practices before NHL games. And others are claiming, Christian objections. So the NHL has now said, well, look, we're going to keep the pride nights, but no one is required to wear a pride themed jersey anymore. They're trying to tamp down this divisiveness.
Well, in Texas, when they wrote the law against certain performances, they don't mention drag, likely because the lawyers thought that they could insulate the law from constitutional challenge. But then the wicked and, quite frankly, stupid Governor Greg Abbott tweeted that he just signed a bill banning drag performances in public.
Well, he has full reign in Texas. Ken Paxton, who's about to go to trial for impeachment in the legislature, he's the attorney general, and he is really, he makes Greg Abbott look like Santa Claus. Ken Paxton is a real evil monster. And the twist there is that his wife is a state senator and was going to have to maybe participate in his trial and vote on him. So they decided no, they would not let her vote in the trial. She can participate in the discussion. She cannot vote. But because she is not voting, her vote is counted as a no to his impeachment.
Well, anyway, if you're not counting, 72 new anti-trans laws were passed in the first 6 months of 2023. 200 more are in the pipeline. 24 states account for most of the new laws. The Nation magazine called it the rise of a new confederacy in America. All are devoted to political minority control of government, and it's a democracy deficit. Okay.
A couple of other quick good news footnotes for Pride Month. Lizzo, who gives out an annual award of a grant, has given $50,000 to the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. She has lately been very supportive of Black trans women, and this is a concrete example of that. And then a nice story from L.A., where the head coach of the WNBA's basketball team, Kurt Miller, is the first male coach to come out in professional basketball. I think in all of professional basketball, but maybe just the WNBA. And he wrote this very moving statement about how he has lost decades of being a role model and mentor. And now he is embracing his gay identity and is very proud of it. So good for him.
Back to some state news. The Attorney General of Kansas, Chris Kobach, says that trans Kansans IDs will be changed back to their sex assigned at birth, citing a new law defining male and female, according to biological characteristics at birth and all these kinds of things. So he's like, they're automatically going to do this the next time you renew your license. California, the Assembly did pass the constitutional amendment protecting marriage equality with bipartisan support. They're trying to get Prop 8 off the books in 2024.
And, you know, Chris Kovac in Kansas is the Ken Paxton of Kansas. Complete monster. Luckily, has been defeated in his races for, what, governor, senator in recent years, but a real monster.
All right. Google is backing away from a company-promoted Pride Month drag performance after some employees claimed it was anti-Christian and religious discrimination. It's a Pride and drag show that's with the popular performer Peaches Christ, the LGBTQ bar Bo in San Francisco. Peaches said, in my world, Jesus had a sense of humor.
Yes, well, we've been talking about that all day. I don't think Samuel Alito has a sense of humor.
Absolutely not. I mean, you've all read about how awful he is and about how, but he was consorting with Paul Singer. And the reason we bring up Paul Singer on this show is he's the one on the right, Alito's in the middle, taking these expensive trips, $100,000 flight, all that kind of stuff, is because Paul Singer, not only does he have stuff in front of the Supreme Court all the time, because he's a big financier, vulture capitalist, but he had a gay son and he gave a lot of money to the marriage equality movement, but obviously had no influence on Alito on that one.
Well, assuming he even tried to.
Right. And by the way, all you need to know about RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's challenging President Biden for the Democratic nomination next year, is that he's set to appear at the far-right anti-LGBTQ Moms for Liberty conference in Philadelphia, along with Trump, DeSantis, Nikki Haley, and the not-so-moderate Asa Hutchinson, June 29th to July 2nd in Philly at the Marriott downtown, June 30th. There's a protest at 9 a.m. There. We'll put that into our email if you're interested.
Yeah. At first, we thought there were just protests Friday and Saturday, but it turns out there are protests every day, all weekend at this Moms for Liberty conference. It's unconscionable that these people are showing up at the Moms for Liberty conference because they're monsters, too. Absolutely. It's Monster Day at Gay USA.
But in Delaware, our out trans state senator there, Sarah McBride, has made it official. She's announcing for Delaware's U.S. House seat. She would be the first out trans member of the U.S. House. The seat is opening up because the U.S. representative, the one there, Lisa Blunt Rochester, is seeking the U.S. Senate seat, opening up because Tom Carper is retiring. They're all Democrats.
Yeah, and we're down to about our last 15 minutes, so we'll move along. A couple of good pieces of news from the Supreme Court, believe it or not. One, Supreme Court let stand a decision that a North Carolina charter school cannot mandate that girls wear skirts. The head of the school tried to argue that girls were fragile vessels. Now, why wearing a skirt would make them less fragile is a mystery to me. It would seem the opposite, but that's what he tried to pull.
Another federal judge in Texas, a three-judge panel, ruled that a Christian-led wellness center is exempt from federal law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity. This is the Fifth Circuit, very right-wing. The company has a policy that if you engage in homosexual or gender nonconforming conduct, you will be fired. So what happened to Bostock? That's what I want to know.
Well, the Supreme Court also turned down the Religious College of the Ozarks in Missouri, which was looking to challenge HUD rules on student housing. They argued they're a religious institution. And the Supreme Court said, no, you have no standing to challenge HUD, but you already have a religious exemption. So just like the Texas Wellness Center. So on the one hand, you know, we're not going to hear your challenge. But on the other hand, we're upholding your religious exemption.
And in Oakland, California, a trans man went to pick up his, his hormone replacement medicine. And the pharmacist said, what do you use this for? And he said, it's none of your effing business. No, he said, it's none of your business.
Yeah.
And then they had a big fight, and the manager came out and apologized, but the pharmacist.
The guy, to the customer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not right. To the pharmacist.
And all right, crime stories, the Colorado, the gunman in the mass shooting at Club Q, Anderson Lee Aldrich, pled guilty to 5 first-degree murder counts and 46 attempted murder counts. No contest to the bias-motivated crime charges. And, you know, the family certainly let him have it at the hearing, and he was sentenced to about 2,200 years in prison.
Governor Hobbs in Arizona signed a couple of executive orders as we speak, restoring access to trans health care for state employees, which had been banned, and forbidding state funds to be used for conversion therapy. And I also want to show you the current issue of New York Magazine, which has an extensive handbook for the Transgender Family Handbook. It goes on for page after page after page. Really comprehensive, really good. This is New York Magazine, the issue for June 19th to July 2nd.
Right. It's international news.
Yes. So
lots of news on Russia's war in Ukraine this week and stepped up bombardment. But in Kyiv, they're holding their first LGBTQ film festival this past week, the Sunny Bunny Festival, in a war zone, no less.
Wow. I would like the list of films. I would like them to show The Battle of Algiers, one of my all-time favorites. And then, well, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong page.
Istanbul?
Yes, Istanbul. You know, the Erdogan government has banned pride parades and any celebrations of LGBT for almost a dozen years. And every year people come out and march anyway, and they get beaten up and arrested by the cops. I had 93 arrested. You've got an updated number of 113.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, police cordoned off large parts of the city and hundreds rerouted to other parts, waving rainbow flags. The police also cracked down on pride in Izmir, detaining at least 48 people.
It's become an annual event and not a fun one.
But Mexico City had 600,000 turnout for pride. And amidst grumbles about how corporate that is getting.
Yeah. So there were complaints about escalating murders of trans people, inadequate access to HIV medications. Their theme was liberty, justice, and dignity. They will never erase us. And don't forget, that is exactly what the right wing is trying to do in this country right now. Erase us.
Right. Terrible. Speaking of erasure and worse, in Israel, an 18-year-old queer woman, Sarit Ahmed, was murdered in a likely honor killing by her family. She had been threatened by her brother since 2020. They were jailed for 3 to 4 months, and she was placed in a shelter, but she went to live with her sister, still fearing for her life, and was killed. No formal suspects, but her brothers told her to drink poison. The younger brother said he would stab her in the stomach, and then I will go drink beer as if nothing happened. Wow.
Well, I'm sorry. Did you say they had threatened her before and had been jailed for 3 or 4 months and came out and seemed to have killed her?
Right.
In the Vatican, what the heck is the Pope up to? I don't get him at all.
He held a meeting with artists in the Sistine Chapel and there with all these artists, and he included, wait for it, Andres Serrano, whose photograph, Kiss Christ, of a crucifix in a tank of urine from 1987, was condemned as blasphemous by many on the right. The Pope gave Serrano a cheery thumbs up and was surprised. Serrano said he was surprised to be invited, but said, as a Christian artist, I'm a Christian artist, but not a blasphemous artist. Francis asked the artists, including writers and filmmakers, not to forget the poor.
Well, sure. And you got a fist bump, too, if you look at that picture closely. Fist bump and thumbs up.
Wonders never cease.
Yeah. All right. AIDS and health news.
Well, yeah. I mean, and by the way, in the UK, the conversion therapy ban was sent to Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, and that they promised 5 years ago, and it's not going to be what we want. Okay.
Yeah. In Chicago and L.A., new small clusters of MPOX breakouts. Andy is tightening his tie. 13 new cases in Chicago after they'd been averaging less than one a week. And some of these are in people who are already vaccinated, some of them HIV positive, therefore deemed to have perhaps lower immunity, people with multiple partners, and concurrent uptick in sexually transmitted infections. No one really knows why this is happening, except that those are indicators of it being around more, and therefore you're more likely to run into it. But that's not really an answer. LA has 6 new cases when they were averaging less than one a week. So people are a little freaked out about this. Please get vaccinated multiply and stay on the lookout for any signs of possible infection.
So we finally had a memorial service, a formal one, for Larry Kramer, the angry man of the AIDS movement and the gay movement and a great writer. This was held at the theater, the Lucille Lortel Theater. It was kind of star-studded. I had to climb over Joel Grey and Julie Halston to get to my seat.
And Patti LuPone.
Well, there's a picture. Dr. Fauci was there. You see him with Bill Ballman and Peter Staley and Jim Igo. The ACT UP people who had interacted with him many times over the years. He came with his bodyguard because that's how he has to travel now.
And spoke
warmly of Larry, despite all their fights. This was taking place in the theater where Larry's Destiny of Me was fought. There's Fauci with David Webster, Larry's husband, who rarely speaks but spoke beautifully about how he misses Larry every day. There's more ACT UP people, including our own Ann Northrup there, and Eric Sawyer, who also spoke in the middle there. Peter Staley there on the left referred to these as Larry's ACT UP children.
It's hard for me to think of myself as a child. I wasn't that much younger than him.
And it was, but what struck me was, and then there's Patti LuPone and
Joel Grey
in the audience with Joel Grey. Joel Grey had been in The Normal Heart years ago, back in 85. So George Wolfe, who directed the revival of The Normal Heart, said that Larry came up to him after he saw the dress rehearsal and said, "I never realized I'd written a love story." And there was so much talk about love in this and how everybody loved each other. Everybody had a complex relationship with Larry, for sure, including you and me. But
it was nice. He died 3 years ago, but it was at the beginning of COVID. And so nobody sort of got together a gathering like this.
We did go to the AIDS Memorial and stand around and talk about him. Yeah.
Yeah. But this was a more formal and whatever. It was recorded. It's supposed to be posted at some point. So when we find out about that, we'll let you know.
Yeah. We saw Tom Viola there, and he seemed to be one of the organizers of this.
Yes. And Eric and Peter and Fauci. And Tony Kushner spoke and John Cameron Mitchell sang beautifully. And it was a nice evening and it went fast. I like that.
Yes.
I was afraid we'd be there till midnight.
Calvin Trillin from The New Yorker was very funny. So when we have the footage, we will send it to you.
And maybe link to it on our show note.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Also in AIDS news this week, you may remember a few weeks ago that the government had been suing Gilead for their outrageous profits on the PrEP drugs that the government had invented, and the government got turned down. Well, the government is now asking a judge to overturn that verdict and take the money away from Gilead. And in Missouri, a trans woman with HIV is suing the state. They kept her in solitary confinement in a prison for 6 years. 6 years because she had HIV. 6 years in solitary. Let's hope she wins. We'll follow that. All right. Entertainment news.
Well, what's up with Queen Latifah?
She's one of the Kennedy Center honorees this year. And it's nice to have an out lesbian be one of the honorees. I guess she's not the first, but, hasn't Lily Tomlin gotten that? But she'll be good. And Dionne Warwick, Barry Gibb, Billy Crystal, Renee Fleming, that show's in December.
I saw comedian Alex Edelman's one-man show on Broadway, Just for Us, about how he, as a Jew, visited a white supremacist group in Queens in somebody's apartment as a way to pick up some material for his act. But it's nevertheless a warmly amusing show, though it did have some people around me really rolling in the aisles. While Edelman talks about having a girlfriend, he also says he has secrets. But I'm not sure if that was another joke.
We went to a screening last night of the first episode of a series coming up on HBO on July 9th. Is the first episode,
yes,
Aaron?
Correct.
Called Last Call, When a Serial Killer Stalked Queer New York. Andy is prominently featured, as is Gay USA, old footage. And it's a compelling story about a guy who was a serial killer and chopped up gay men.
And it's compelling because it's also like what the community had to do, from the Anti-Violence Project to like Matt Forman and B. Hansen, to get the police to pay attention to this, to do something about it. We've got people being picked up and killed. It's happening again and again and again. What are you doing? And that's what it's largely about. And wonderful interviews with it really humanizes the victims and lets their families and friends speak. And that was great.
Last Call, HBO, 4 episodes starting July 9th. The LPGA published a lovely piece on the relationship between two of their star players, Georgia Hall and Ryan O'Toole. Very nice. And one of the competitors this week was Mel Reed, who we've talked about before, who was wearing a rainbow themed cap and said that she almost quit golf, but she came back because I want to win tournaments and I want my kid and my wife to be running out. Like, that's something that I would love a moment to have. It's definitely given me a lot more drive and got my hunger back for the game, for sure.
And on Broadway, Fat Ham, Last Chance to See It, closes July 2nd, gay-themed Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy.
And on Netflix, a new series starring Kim Cattrall, Glamorous, and one of the characters is played by Miss Benny, who came out as a trans woman. She's playing a non-binary character on Glamorous, just starting on Netflix.
Well, what a week. And it's still June, still time to make your Pride donation to Gay USA if you're so moved.
Around here, every month is Pride Month, so don't confine yourself to June for making donations. We're here all day, every day.
It's true.
Yes, but thank you for joining us for Pride Month. Thank you to Maren Johns for sitting in for me for the last 2 weeks, doing a terrific job. She'll be back soon as Andy goes away a little.
That's true. I will be going away in mid-July, but it's great to have you back, Anne.
I'm happy to be back, but it's too much work. but thank you.
We need replacements.
Yes. Apply here.
Reinforcement.
We will see you next week. Thank you.
Bye-bye.